Hello, everybody, and welcome to So What Happens Next. My name is Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And this week we are returning to form with a movie I've seen plenty of times and a movie Amber has not seen. It is Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Doing fine after that Nancy Drew Scooby-Dooby-Doo episode we had last week.
Without the Scooby-Doo, but yes.
You know, I wish I kind of brought it up on that episode, but I would have loved if, like, you do... I'm kind of waiting, not loved, but I'm waiting for the gritty Scooby-Doo CW show after that. I think it's...
Yeah.
It's coming. All right, everybody, it's coming. I'm sure. But we're not here to talk about that today. We're here to talk about, frankly, in my opinion, a classic film of the, you know, 2000s at this point, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So, Amber, you have never seen this movie.
Nope.
Is that true? You've never, you are just very loosely aware that it happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I saw it, like I saw the advertisement for
the
trailers, and that was it.
Gotcha. And that would have been...
Oh, we're not seeing that. We're seeing whatever else is playing
right.
at that time.
And that would have been 2009, 2010. This movie by now is actually kind of old. And it really was weird to see it be that old. And to go, I was in high school when this came out. Like, oh, shit. I was in high school when this came out. So that brings us, though, to our five things as usual, which I have on the board. Amber, the number one being that this was directed by Edgar Wright, who... we may know from one of my favorite trilogies of all time, the Cornetto Trilogy. If you're not familiar with the Cornetto Trilogy, it is Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End. Movies that, between the two of us, we have probably seen plenty of times, but can never quite get enough of. So, taking kind of his style and going this movie to it, you know, so you have kind of an idea of the style that we're dealing with, style director. As I said before, number two is that this movie came out in 2010, so... think of your kind of, I would almost call this like I'll give this like a double whammy one here. This is kind of like an indie type of movie, I guess. It had that feel, it had that indie feel, and, you know, 2010 indie movies.
I mean, it's Michael Cera in it, so it's definitely
and that is
indie.
That is the next one we have up here is Michael Cera. 2010 Michael Cera, what more can I say?
Yeah, when everyone thought he was like, you know, cute from because of Juno.
Yeah.
Did Juno come out the same time?
This is post-Juno.
Okay, yeah. So this is when he kind of got a little more fame because of that.
Number four. Number four here is, I believe this is based on a comic book.
Uh-huh.
It's like kind of almost an anime-esque comic book. Not quite anime, but it's an animated comic book thing. And this movie has a very, number five is this movie has a very, very strong video game vibe to it.
Okay.
You will know what I mean when we watch it, but
okay.
Taking those five things, a lot of them I know are very, you know, more feel to the movie, but just kind of taking Scott Pilgrim versus the World, it's like a comic book, it's from the early 2010s, the dawn of the 2010s, starring Michael Cera from that time, Edgar Wright directed it, and it's almost like a video game. What can you tell me you're thinking this movie is about?
So, judging from the trailers I saw years ago, a decade ago, I definitely know that it's about a guy who kind of hooks up with this girl and everything's going great. And then she's like, but wait a sec, you have to defeat all my ex-boyfriends. And he's like, what? And so it's kind of like that meme, like where it's just like me, my girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
All her ex-boyfriend.
Her dad.
Yeah, her dad.
But instead of the dad, it's like my
ex,
the other ex.
Yeah, that's basically how I see, like, the movie.
Uh-huh.
And so he has to go and defeat all of these ex-boyfriends. And they, as he goes, since you said it's, like, video game-esque, as he goes through all these ex-boyfriends, it gets harder and harder. and they're more difficult to defeat, like based on whatever powers that they have and such. Right. So I think that's basically it. Mm-hmm. Like that's the gist of the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would definitely say, without giving anything away, that it's a bit more elaborate than that.
Okay.
Just because it's a movie.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's for something that is so simple sounding as you present it, I will say it is pretty good. Like, it is a good movie in my opinion.
Yeah. And I mean, judging from like Shaun of the Dead, you have this unremarkable dude that's just kind of like not like anything special, I guess.
Yeah.
Who turns out to be like someone super special and is able to, I don't know, do really cool shit.
Right. So, yeah. Kind of your standard hero mm-hmm. character. Yeah, I mean, we'll find out in a little bit here what actually happened. I guess in lieu of giving you guys what I think happens, since I know very well what happens in this movie, at least I remember the plot. You know, as far as rewatching this goes, I'm kind of anticipating, like, I'm actually anticipating being a little disappointed. It's not that I think this movie's bad, or I think when I think about it, it's somehow not as good as I remember. But I think of something like, I feel like I kind of won the lotto with Bill and Ted. Like when you, myself, and Patrick all kind of watched Bill and Ted, that was myself and Patrick's, like, you know, however manyth time watching the first two, and just it was what it was. Like, it was just like almost perfect, you know, some slurs in there aside, but just like as far as the rest of the movie went, it was just like how I remembered it being. Like, it was mm-hmm. funny, made me laugh, and all that other stuff. Not every movie is going to be like that, and nostalgia is a cruel, cruel mistress in that regard. So I'm kind of bracing myself for this one because I'm like, oh man, what if it sucks? So yeah, Amber, do you have any last minute questions, I guess, about this movie besides asking what it's necessarily about, or like if there's anything you should be expecting or bracing for as far as this one's concerned?
Not really. Yeah. I don't, it's going to be better than Nancy Drew.
Oh, I think so too.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, do you think that you are like, is this going to be like a Bill and Ted situation where you're like, I'm about this movie, or do you think it might go?
You know, I was thinking that before we started this pot or this episode, at least. I was like, is this going to be like Bill and Ted? If so, I'll be down for it. If not, like,
well, I guess what I'm asking is like, is this going to have the same result as like, you never saw Bill and Ted? I did.
Yeah.
And you were loving Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
As opposed to our now infamous Lost episode.
Yeah, I definitely
think
episodes. I might like it because there are other kind of movies that came out during that time, like Kick-Ass, which is also a comic book.
Yeah,
kind of in that same format where it's a little bit nerdy, but it's also really violent
too. I've never seen Kick-Ass, but I'm aware.
We gotta watch that.
Future episode Kick-Ass, apparently, guys.
It kind of reminds me of, because there is a little bit of animation in there, and there's a lot of, like, it's a great cast.
Right.
Nicolas Cage, for one, and yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's like, if it, like, is the way I think it will be, I think it'll be fine.
Okay.
Like, I think I'll really like it.
Yeah, I guess I'm basing it kind of on, like, the Blues Brothers to Bill and Ted spectrum here. Is like, I love that movie. Amber was not loving that movie. Spoilers for an episode you'll never hear. If I ever find a way to recover it, I will post it forthwith. But it, as far as I could tell, it's lost. But at the same time, Bill and Ted was, you liked Bill and Ted a lot. I mean, you were laughing your ass off at Excellent Adventure. And I also laughed my ass off at Excellent Adventure. So yeah, I was kind of like, is this going to be on that scale, you know, of are you going to love it, are you going to hate it?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm at least happy that you're going in with kind of an open arms for this one. Not like
Yeah, I usually always do.
Yeah, well, debatable.
I try to. Excuse me.
I'll refer you to our Wrath of Khan episode. Anyway.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a deep cut. That's like episode 2. But in the meantime, as we go and discuss what we like, what we don't like, and go and watch this movie, if you'll go ahead and give us a few moments of your time while we spend about 2-ish hours, almost 2 hours of our time, we're going to go ahead and watch Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Thank you. And we are back. So that, Amber, was Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Straight out the gate. What do you think?
I thought it was amazing. I'm surprised, like, I've never seen it before.
Yeah. No, I loved this. It, like, watching it again made me remember, like, oh, yeah, this used to be, like, in my top five list of movies. When I remember, like, in high school, like, if someone said, what are your top five movies? It would be other movies, but, like, this was at least between five and three for me, I think, just off the top of my head. This movie has held up okay in the decade that it's existed, which is, like, really weird, especially with some of this cast, to just, like, see them a decade ago. Like, especially, like, Aubrey Plaza. It's, like, listening to her talk, it's, like, it just sounds like a baby version of her. And I keep, like, waiting for the like, April Ludgate from Parks and Rec character to just kind of, like, shine through. And it comes close, but then, like, there's the casual swearing and shit, which is pretty funny. But, yeah, so this movie... you know, Amber more or less kind of got it when we were originally, like, you know, talking about what she thinks is going to happen and stuff. So this movie is about Scott Pilgrim, Michael Cera, is kind of, I think one of the things is, like, you kind of were like, oh, he has to fight, he meets this girl and has to fight her seven evil ex-boyfriends, yeah. Right? Well, not all of them are boyfriends, one. And two, he kind of, like, Scott in this movie is shitty, and they don't, I think that the way a lot of people remember this movie maybe is that he's a lot better than he actually is, like, as a character, because he kind of sucks. Like, he cheats on his girlfriend.
Yeah, like, I didn't expect him to have, like, already have a girlfriend.
Right, and I didn't really catch it the first times when I watched it in the past, but it's just, like, he actually kind of sucks. Like, all the women he's ever dated or had a relationship with kind of hate him. Yeah. Like, he's always like, oh, it's not me to blame. And it's like, it's so weird to me because it's like, you look at Michael Cera in these movies and you think, like, oh, he's like the scrawny little dude who's the one getting dumped or something. Yeah, but instead he's like yeah, the 2010 simp Michael Cera. No, Michael Cera's great. Please don't take that any negatively, Mr. Cera, if you happen to be listening. But yeah, in this movie, though, he's kind of like he acts that way that you sort of expect his character. They kind of had that typecasting going, but he is sort of a douchebag to, like, these
women.
And he's
also kind of creepy too. Like, he's just trying to go after this girl, even though he currently at that point in time has a girlfriend.
High schooler,
a relationship with a high schooler, which is, like, really kind of messed up. But again, this was
they highlight it as messed up. Like, they're constantly like, Scott, this is weird, and they're just like, you're basically rebounding hard, and you need to, you know, get over Brie Larson, who happens to be in this movie, by the way, who dumped him, I guess, pretty brutally in the past, and then she became, like, a famous rock star. So that happened, and he's really having trouble handling it. So he goes for something he calls simple and dates Knives Chow, the 17-year-old girlfriend of Scott Pilgrim, who he then cheats on for Ramona Flowers, played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And he just kind of, like, falls head over heels for her, and they have, like, a thing going, and it's kind of like he hasn't quite told Knives yet. Eventually, he does break up with Knives, but it's like, this has already been going on, and it's sort of like...
Yeah.
And everyone tells him this, like... Yeah. Everyone tells him you need to cut it off, yeah.
I think his sister is like, you need to tell... Or who is it? Someone says that you need to tell Knives, or
we're gonna tell... Almost explicitly gay roommate.
Yeah, Wallace. I love Wallace.
Wallace is, like, the best. Yeah, Kieran Culkin, brother of Macaulay Culkin.
That's why he looks so familiar.
Yeah, he is one of Macaulay Culkin's siblings, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Wallace Wells. He is Scott Pilgrim's obtusely gay boyfriend, and I don't mean that in any way against the gay community, but they play it pretty hard in this movie, and it kind of,
like,
screams.
I love it, but...
But at the same time, it's like, it's screaming that, like, just past the early 2000s kind of type thing, where it's like, he's gay and that's the joke. And I'm like, I don't know, he's the lines he says are, like, genuinely funny outside of the stereotype. Like, when he's heckling the band with the little kid drummer at the Battle of the Bands.
Yes.
And he's like, this one's for you. I hate you. I really, really hate you. and then, you know, they play and he's like, oh, it sucks or whatever. But yeah, he's basically like, you need to tell Knives or I will or something to that effect. And Scott breaks up with Knives and then goes on his merry way with Ramona. And that's where you kind of get this like, you know, fight, video game-esque, anime-esque fight thing between the seven evil exes, where he gets like an email describing the situation. He kind of just blows it off and then goes on with his life.
Yeah, and then the thing with Amazon too, which was really weird to me.
I didn't know that we had that was a thing back then. Like, so
like even back then you had people like delivering not packages.
UPS. Yeah. Like, so Ramona Flowers' job is like a delivery person for Amazon, and he like orders some random shit just to have her deliver it so he can ask her out, which again is a little creepy. Like, I have to admit that was a little like cringy today to see that. It's like, I mean, it was funny the way like she's like, are you going to open that? And he's like, I'll do it later. And just like throws it into, it goes behind him and straight into the garbage can. And then they go out. But it was also like, it's a little weird. Like, I feel like if you actually did that.
Yeah.
The person you were doing that to would be pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think maybe even in 2010, that'd be a little.
Yeah. It's like if she were a pizza delivery person and. He's just kind of like,
constantly ordering pizza he won't eat so that she comes to the door. Like, it's it's a little fucking weird. But yeah, so they go out, they have a relationship, and then he has to fight seven evil exes. Ultimately, it culminates in, like, she has this one ex who blew her off, who's also a record producer that his band is trying to get with so that they could have a record deal, and it's... He's the one who orchestrated it all. He's sort of the big boss, the big bad of the movie. Like, he's the boss at the end of the video game, and you have to save the girl. And I gotta say, like, I liked the way that, like, before we really dive into all the nitty-gritty of this movie, I will say, like, I liked the end of this movie, how, like, it's like, Scott earned the power of love. And, like, he pulls a sword, but he loses.
Yeah.
And then it's like, Scott earned the power of, like, self-esteem or whatever the fuck it says, because he has an extra life. Like, they play it really well, and I've noticed this with, like, I think almost all of the Edgar Wright movies I've seen, which isn't that many, but it's a fair bit of, or there's more than a few, and this being one of them, is he has this way of just like, here's the movie, like, I'm presenting you the movie in the first 15 to 20 minutes, like, this is the plot, and all of these things will happen in a more grandiose way by the end. So, like, him getting an extra life, like, I think some other point he's playing a game and he's like, oh, I got an extra life, cool, and like continues on.
Yeah, and I love the quarter bit, like, every time he defeats someone
they blow up into coins.
They're like, oh, coins, and everybody
and it's like effort, and like the coins incrementally go up, like with the scores. It's like 1,000,
it's like
you
need like a Luigi's Mansion like vacuum thing to vacuum cleaner them up. And just suck up all the
But I really liked how these things kind of all came to fruition, right? Like, him and Knives playing Dance Dance Revolution, like, as the ninjas, actually came up in the final fight, where it's like they're doing the same thing they were doing in the beginning. Like, it's just got Edgar Wright plastered all over it. It's like, hey, remember that thing from the beginning that was just a game? It's not. Like, cue Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead or World's End. Like, all those movies, for instance, the whole Cornetto trilogy, it's like, I'm going to describe to you in the opening sequence exactly how this movie is going to go. You might not know it, but I am. And then by the end of the movie, you're going to be like, oh my God. And it's like, I don't know. It's cool. It makes me really like him as a director. But yeah, the way this movie ends was just kind of cool. Because even when it's like, oh my God, I got to face evil Scott. And then, or Nega Scott or whatever the heck it was. And then it just ends up like they just talked it out. And they're like, yeah, we're going to go get brunch tomorrow. Like, I'm like, you know, I feel like, if it's the opposite of you, you know him just as well as yourself. You might as well not fight him. Like, it's fine. But yeah, so this movie, like we said, is from 2010. And I gotta say, it's like got so much of that time in it. It's like just on the edge of like people having cell phones, for instance. Like, not everyone in this movie has a phone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Scott doesn't have a phone.
Yeah. And they use like a landline.
Exactly. And they're like still like looking at CDs and things or records and things. Like, stuff that I very much feel like
the computer was like, right, it was like a brick.
Right. It's a giant like tan kind of machines, and it's just like, man, this is so like, we were right there on that edge of like, if you were, you know, in early 20s living on your own, that's probably all you could afford to have at the time, or like whatever. You're still listening to CDs because not all cars had like MP3 players and shit in them yet and that kind of thing. Or, you know, Bluetooth and all that crap. it was such like a neat little like look. And then just this fucking cast before like a lot of these people really took off is just kind of interesting. Like I mentioned earlier, like we have Aubrey Plaza. I mean, Michael Cera's kind of doing the Michael Cera thing at this point. So I think Superbad's already been out or it's about to be out.
Yeah.
And I think Juno already happened, like we discussed at the top of the show. Juno already happened. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, she goes on to do, I think, like Fargo or something like that for a minute. There's a ton of people. Anna Kendrick goes and does, what's it called? Pitch Perfect, or has already done Pitch Perfect by this point. I don't know when that movie came out.
Pitch Perfect is later.
Pimp Perfect. Yeah.
Pimp Perfect.
Yeah, Pitch Perfect. Okay, yeah. But that like really like shoots her up the ladder here. It's like she becomes big. Brie Larson, of course, like we mentioned, fucking is now a Marvel superhero. Like she goes on to do a bunch of stuff, and it's like in this she almost has like a bit
funny
part.
Because yeah, like her voice was even different and everything. It's just everyone's like younger.
Yeah.
Like Chris Evans, younger.
I completely forgot. Like there's so many like Marvel people, or at least not maybe Marvel people, but there's so many like people who are in big things now.
Yeah.
That it's just like, oh wow, like, you know, Chris Evans in that time when Chris Evans was still playing like the douchey character.
Yeah,
like,
which is crazy because now he, you know,
now he's Captain America. Yeah. I'm a hero. I'm a great guy. Like I'm your stereotypical epitome of good guy-ness. Yeah. And in this movie and like Fantastic Four and others, he's like, I'm a surf douchebag. Or in this case, I'm a skater douchebag. Like, fuck you. And it's just, it was really, one, it was kind of refreshing. Like Knives Out is a nice refreshing twist on Chris Evans, yes. But it's like after the fact, mm-hmm. So it's like it's almost tongue in cheek in that like we know this is Captain America. In this, that hasn't happened yet, so it's just like I'm playing douche because that's what I do. Like there you go, Allison Pill from previous episode Devs and also Star Trek Picard. I mean she's in other stuff too, but like
I mean overall this is a great.
It's a great cast, but it's almost like a great cast before it would be considered a great cast, if you know what I mean. Like it's not, and I want to say like no one does bad in this movie. Like the people that we didn't mention,
yeah,
like, no one does bad.
But I wonder if at that time a lot of these people were like no names or
I think
even,
they I
yeah.
think a lot of them were. Like maybe not no names in some cases, but I mean in some of these I think things like were just sort of starting up, right? So like Aubrey Plaza's, they maybe released like one season of Parks and Recreation, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Michael Cera's done things. I mean, he's been in movies for a while, but like Juno was probably that big one that kind of happened. Maybe Superbad's happened by this
the
point.
The 2010s were great.
Like, it was kind of that start for a lot of these people. Like, these people become people you know, like, by later. And I think at this point, they weren't huge. But the movie was like big enough for them and niche enough for them to be like, yeah, I'll do it. But it's also like, well, I also need to make money. So I can't really say no explicitly.
Yeah, and that was the time where you had more indie films. An entire franchise. So before Marvel or when Marvel, I think, was getting started, but it wasn't really like a big thing or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, Iron Man, the first Iron Man would have come out like 2 years prior. Iron Man 2 probably would have come out alongside this. So, I mean, we've had like two or three Marvel movies by the time this comes mm-hmm. out. We are not hitting like Marvel mania because I mean like two of those three would have been Iron Man.
Yeah.
So it's not, you're not really, I don't feel like you're missing, you know, like we're not at that franchise fever kind of type thing. So it's great because movies like this can still happen back then, you know, like we can get a movie like this where it's, we watch it today, and there's a few things, like, there's a little, like, kind of Asian race humor in this movie that's a little, like, that's a little cringy. Like, it was a little cringy to, like,
It was very cringy.
Like, it's really, like, when Knives, like, she goes to, like, kill Gideon and jumps at him, and she's like, it's time to chow down, and I'm like, oh.
And I'm pretty sure someone called her like a racial slur. In, like,
yeah, some kind of like bing bong or something, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That part was really
weird. Yeah, Brandon Routh, who goes on to be Superman. And he's in the, I think, the Legends of Tomorrow show or whatever it's called on CW.
DC Legends.
Yeah, that's it. And he was in, I think, Flash or Arrow or one of the... He's in that whole Arrowverse television distinct. Yeah, I mean, like, he's great in all the... I think he was a fine Superman, too, in that one-off Superman movie. But, like, in this... His character was hilarious with the vegan thing where it's like they catch him because he ate like chicken parmesan once and they made him drink half and
he
half.
Actually like striked out three times, I think.
Yeah.
They were just like, you did this and this. And he's like,
chicken parmesan's not vegan?
Yeah. And they take away like his vegan powers.
Which is wild because like the partner is, what's his name from fucking Pacific Rim? The guy who always reminds me of Quagmire from Family Guy. Like, I was losing my shit when I saw that. And I loved how they were like, yeah, like really, like it was like if Hot Fuzz entered the movie for a minute and then left, it was what it felt like. And I think it could have only been better if like Simon Pegg and Nick Frost were the ones that busted in the door and were like, vegan police. But yeah, he says something like bing bong or whatever the fuck. It's something along those lines directed at her. And it's like, hey, that's a little... I mean, he's a douche, so like, this is really amplifying that, but it was like...
Which was funny because... Because
he slaps her or something, right? Like, he slaps her down, and that's what kind of gets...
But like, in other parts of the film, it's like, oh, like, woman power, or like, women empowerment.
Yeah.
Where, so, I guess when like, Scott and his new girlfriend, they're kind of like... It looks like they're going to sleep with each other. But then she stops him and she's like, no, I get to make the decision as to like when
I want
to.
She's like, I changed my mind.
Yeah,
like that was
mine and I have the right to. And he's like, okay. And I was just like, damn, like that's kind of like a big, you know, thing because.
And I mean,
of course, before.
I feel like, I don't want to say it's like ahead of its time because I'm sure it happened more often than not, but like, I feel like presenting that way is such like a good step forward because it wasn't like it. It felt very
like where it took a step back
case,
with like the whole Chinese like racial slurs and stuff. Like it went forward with stuff like that.
Right. Which is interesting because it was like, it wasn't like Scott was just like, okay. And they like went along with it. It was like he was like clearly caught off guard and confused, which I feel like would be the natural approach to this. It's like you're basically naked. You're making out hard. Things are about to go there. And then it's just like, you know what, I changed my mind. And he's just like, wait, okay, this is fine. And like, he even goes so far as to be like, you know, I really needed whatever this is, which is just kind of sitting there laying in bed cuddling or whatever. And I guess it insinuates that they have sex at some point between then and the next time we see him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like kind of like, okay, this is great to see. Like, we're not just seeing like standard, like, make out and start fucking. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But then they go step back again when they make fun of her basically for being like a, like, bi. Because there's that one girl, she was like in a
relationship. Oh, that's right.
With,
yeah,
she was
they,
like, I was
do.
Going through a phase
yeah.
and I was like, oh, that's not good.
Yeah,
like,
it was a little weird because, like, they're the, one
and then
of
he
the
got
evil
all
exes.
Mad at
yeah.
her. So just like, because it ended up being a girl, and I'm just like,
well, like one of the evil exes is a girl, and it's like a whole the joke is that she had a quote unquote lesbian phase or whatever, and it's just kind of like a, you know, for the, and it kind of makes, and I think a lot of these actually do sort of make Ramona look shitty just as much as Scott. I think that's kind of
like they're both kind of shitty,
which is the interesting parallelism I don't think you see when you watch this movie in high school. Right, you see like Scott is this underdog hero beating these guys who are supposed to be better than him,
with a super hot girlfriend,
right? Whereas when Ramona, because Ramona describes each and every person when and how she broke up with them, and it's kind of like with this girl for as a point, it's like she's like, you know, it was a phase or whatever and I got over it, and she's like, it wasn't a phase for me, and it was like a whole thing. And it's like, this is kind of shitty. Like, this is actually really, really fucking shitty. It's like, this you kind of almost took advantage of this girl in a way.
So maybe this movie is actually pointing out things that are like super wrong
for like, but for a lot of people, because a lot of these things, it's like Scott by the end of this movie realizes all the shit he's pulled, and it's like the whole movie he just denies
it.
Yeah, especially,
he gets like a reset, which is nice, but a lot of people,
well, you don't get that in real life.
Yeah.
You know, you got to live up with it.
It's
and
not
even
like
then
a video game.
He doesn't, right? Like, he beats Gideon, And then Knives goes to kill, or he thinks he beats Gideon, and then Knives goes to kill Ramona, and he's like, stop, because the first time we do this, he's stammering and he can't find the words, and it falls apart, and everybody loses. The second time, when he, you know, revives, basically, to go fight the boss again, he, like, stops them, and he explains it all out, and he's like, I'm a piece of shit. Like, neither of you deserve to deal with this. You know, like, I did this to you. And I'm apologizing, but, like, I'm not expecting anything here. And then we go back into a fight sequence. Since we're kind of, spinning around that point, what did you think of the end? Like, how the movie ends, so to frame it for those of you who, for some reason, haven't watched this movie, you kind of get this repeated imagery of a door just in the middle of the street. And it's usually what Ramona and Scott go through. Mm-hmm. And the imagery here is pretty interesting because the first time you see it, it's sort of Ramona flying through the door, kind of dragging Scott behind her willingly, but he's just kind of along for the ride. The second time you see this scene at the very last shot of the movie, they're both kind of almost standing there as equals, hand in hand, walking through the door together. To get to this point, like, Knives and Scott are like really in sync, kind of like you see at the beginning of this movie when they play DDR. And they do that same sequence to beat the bad guy.
Yeah.
Ramona's like, you guys are a great team. And, like, is really heartbroken, but is like, I'll see you later. And, like, goes to leave. The Knives looks at Scott and says, you know, go for her. Like, go after her. What the hell are you doing? And it's like, the only thing I think could have been better about that is if she herself was straight up just like, I'm 17 years old. Like, this
did
isn't
that
big.
Did she say
that,
though?
No, she doesn't.
I thought she
did. No, she says to him, like, you were fighting, you did all of this for her.
Oh, no, she said, I'm too cool for you anyways.
Exactly. She's like, I'm too cool for you anyways. Which is kind of interesting because, like, for her arc, she thought she wasn't cool and thought Scott was the coolest person in the world. When in reality, he kind of sucks. And, like, his life totally sucks. Like, he's broke. He's getting evicted. Like, his life isn't great. And she looks up to him only to realize once she kind of enters this world that, like, oh, she's actually can be who she wants to be and be really cool. I feel like it just that extra step, kind of just to almost, I guess, round out that joke, because they're like constantly like harping on Scott, like she's 17 years old, like she's 17 years old, Scott. And I feel like it would just been a nice like butt end to the joke to just be like, I'm 17 years old, like I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And then he goes after Ramona, but which is what happens. He ultimately goes after Ramona. They go through the door. What did you think of that ending? Because I have to say, the second time around, it felt a little weird to me, the way it kind of paced itself. But what did you think of it? Like, that he ends up with Ramona instead of Knives, or instead of no one?
I definitely thought he was going to end up with Ramona, because I knew it wasn't going to work out with Knives anyways, just because of her age, and then he cheated on her.
Right.
So, actually, was surprised that Ramona didn't initially, or was like, oh yeah, like we're totally together now, or we can be together because you just destroyed Gideon. She was actually kind of like, oh, like this isn't gonna work out, like my life's like crazy enough,
right,
and I think it's just better if we don't. And I was like kind of surprised at that, but I feel like at least with all the past girlfriends, it seemed like for him it was easy. Like, they just kind of came, like, naturally to him for whatever reason, because it's very clear, like, from the beginning, he's kind of a loser.
Scott?
Like, yeah, Scott is kind of a loser. And I just felt like he has all these really cool girlfriends, actually. Like, even Brie Larson, she wasn't that bad. She just, like, kind of, I felt like she...
I think the fame got to her head.
Yeah, the fame got to her head, definitely. But, I mean, she just kind of changed as a person, and maybe Scott didn't change, and that was the issue. Like, right. We don't really know, because they never, like, talk about it or develop on it.
Well, I think it's that, like, Allison Pill, right? They constantly are like, they dated,
and
she hates him.
Yeah. Right. And it seems like it definitely was his fault. Like, he dumped her.
And he constantly acts like nothing, everything's okay.
Yeah.
And it's, they make
like,
a very strong
just
point.
Like, yeah,
to show
like she got over it, and they're like, "Are you sure?" And she's
and
just
it's like
over
a
the
wipe
corner,
over to
yeah.
her, like glaring at him, like with her teeth. And then after he apologizes to her, like that's what she wanted. She just wanted an apology. She doesn't want to get back together. She doesn't want all this other shit. He apologizes to her, and then she, you know, is like, "We are sex bomb, and we're here to watch Scott kick your ass," or whatever the fuck he says. Or she says, and it goes off on that, and she's like all hyped and friends again. And I think it's like the only time you see her smile the whole movie, which is probably the point.
Yeah.
I think with with Brie Larson, the deal here is she broke up with Scott, unlike every other girl. Right. And that's what makes him the tragic victim.
And that's what started kind of his like spiral.
Right. Because that's where this movie kind of starts. It's like after that. But it's like, it shows Scott clearly like victimizing himself because Brie Larson had a brutal breakup with him, which apparently like it's said to be quite brutal. Like that's not a lie or hyperbole or anything. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you were shitty to a lot of other people, apparently. You know, one, maybe you deserved it. Two, you know, what do those people, like, you're ironically sitting here like, I'm the victim, woe is me, when you've done that like 3 to 4 times already. And you did it again after cheating on someone. Like, she cheated on you, you cheated on Knives. Mm-hmm. Like, how does that make you better?
Yeah.
And it's a whole thing. And it's a movie as like, I really am upset almost that like the first time I experienced it was in high school, because it's like, I didn't pick up on half this shit when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Like watching it now, it's like, wow.
I don't think you see any of the issues that we've discussed already. Right. Like you don't see an issue with like a 17-year-old dating someone who's, 'cause
you
like,
are
college,
like 17. You know? Yeah. You don't think it.
Like you think that's the coolest shit because that means you're like, you know.
Which seems, which is kind of the way it was portrayed, right? It's like, he's like, what, 22, she's 17.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, she's so cool because she's dating a college age dude. And it's like, well, and everyone's looking at the college age dude like, dude, you're either a creep or you're just sad or both. Yeah. No, when you're in high school, you watch this movie, and I gotta be honest, like, it's like, this movie, even today, I would want, like, whoever did the special effects for this movie to do whatever inevitable live action Dragon Ball franchise we get in the future. Because like Dragon Ball Evolution never happened and looks like shit. This movie, like it captured that anime fight style.
It did.
So perfectly in live action to where it was like just on the edge of absurd. Like it was just self-aware enough to make you go, they know it like it's kind of goofy, but at the same time not be so serious and then be so over the top that it's like, ugh. Like by the time you get to like 3 or 4 of these evil exes in, you're kind of like, this is the world I'm living in, I'm fine. Like they present it to you and you just are cool with it, whereas other movies it's like, we're doing this based on an anime or like Ghost in the Shell or something, and we're just gonna make it look like that with real people. And it's like, there's a reason it was drawn in the first place. Mm-hmm. And that is so that it doesn't look like garbage. Like, fuck me. But this, and as far as that goes, this movie killed it in the special effects department.
Yeah, it did.
Like, just the aesthetics of everything, like between video game
and I think indie that was
drama
the,
and everything.
The big, I guess, thing about this movie was like the special effects. Yeah. I don't think it was necessarily like the plot, even though they had like good points or like good things that like came out of it. But otherwise, like overall, it was definitely like the special effects that like made it what it is.
Right. No, I agree. I think that's kind of what makes this movie hold up too, because it doesn't lean on them too hard to where they look super dated. It's like,
yeah,
almost
like
better
you don't
with
look
age.
Back at it and you're like, oh, kind of like the Matrix. Like, yikes, that looks really bad.
Oh yeah, like Matrix 2 when he's all when you get cartoon Keanu running around. Yeah, no, that's fucking oof.
But if you look at Lord of the Rings, that holds up pretty well. Right. Like there are some parts that's a little weird, but otherwise it's freaking great. Like, you
and
can
I
watch
think with
that
this,
over and over again.
I think with this, the nice thing is it's like it gets almost better with age because it's on that line of like, we are self-aware campy, mm-hmm. but we're not doing it in a goofy way. Yeah. Like we're just like, it's goofy, it's campy, but we're still giving you something that's like mildly serious enough to where when it looks worse, quote unquote, it makes the movie better because it's just campier in that regard. It's like, oh, okay, this works just fine. Things like Lord of the Rings, unfortunately, do kind of suffer from that at a couple points where it's like, I can tell that that's a little weird. It holds up really well, but when you start seeing it and like pulls you out just a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it's not campy. It's not goofy. It's a very serious movie. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a fantasy movie. But yeah, no, this movie, like, it's just that it's such a solid movie. And I love that there's no like Scott Pilgrim 2 or some weird shit like that.
If they did have that, it would kind of be like Ash versus Evil Dead. It's like, you know, where it's an older Scott and he's like kind of doing the same shit. And everybody's like, Scott, you can't say that or whatever. You can't do that.
Or just like a long drawn out series of it'd just be rehashing the movie. It would just be like, Scott, yeah. you have to get Ramona back. You got divorced 3 years ago and your life sucks. You gotta win her back. But like, you have to fight what's left of the seven evil exes again, or the ghosts of them or some shit. And it was, I think it would be horrible.
The
I think it would
be Ramona's past.
I think it would be absolute nightmarishly bad.
Yeah. I think like it being a one hit wonder, I guess is what you would call it. Like, I think that's good enough.
I mean, I guess it's a one-hit wonder in the sense that, like, we only needed one Scott Pilgrim versus the World. We don't need to remake it. We don't need to revisit it in any other form except just watching it again. For all of these people in the cast, pretty much, it's definitely not a one-hit wonder. I mean, Michael Cera goes on to do a bunch of stuff. Everybody in this cast, including the director, like, they go on to do other things that are big. It wasn't like this was the hit and they walk away. Yeah. I pray to God no one touches this. Like, I want... I want Edgar Wright to do what, like, Robert Zemeckis did with Back to the Future and be like, no one will touch this ever. Yeah, please. But, so, like, overall, what's your, like, rating on the movie? Because this is your first time watching it, you know? Like, you've never watched it before, so, like, you don't have the nostalgia lens. Like, what's your rating of this movie?
I think I'd give it an 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. What's bringing you down, specifically?
I think what's bringing me down is just like the plot itself. Like it seems really like we go through a lot of the plot points really fast.
Okay.
Like, especially with taking down like the ex boyfriends, like it just like starts kind of like, oh, like we're going through one after the other. Yeah. Oh, we're at the end right now. Like, and that's probably because it's a movie and not a show. So it's like you can only do a certain amount. And I'm sure like in the comics, it goes into more detail. But I was like, oh, this is kind of like really fast paced because like we jump right into it. Like everything's like the next day, like, you know, he's doing this or whatever. So
that, you know, that, and I think that's sort of why I wanted to ask you, because it's like you don't have the nostalgia lens. I do. So if something like that doesn't really show up to me, but it makes a lot of sense because we are living in like a day of. You are given like the 8 hour long movie split up into, you know, seven parts or whatever. And that's your Netflix binge series. So something like Scott Pilgrim would have been a 7 to 8 episode epic of Scott Pilgrim versus the World, as opposed to a roughly 2 hour long movie where he just goes and beats seven people, ending it all out. Mm-hmm. And it's like that's actually kind of an interesting take. So like, before we get into like my reviews and stuff, what do you think this would look like today? Not in so much casting and stuff, because that'd just be really hard. There's way too many people to cast in this movie. But I mean, do you think this would be like a Netflix thing, or, you know, Amazon, you know, streamable multi-episode thing?
I think it would. Yeah, it would definitely be like a Netflix thing where you would just kind of like binge through the episodes.
Right.
I don't really see it on like Amazon or anything else like that, just because Netflix is definitely more for like the...
Oh, well, this kind of type thing. Yeah, sure. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. I meant just more in the streaming service, not which one.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, I definitely think it'd probably be better as a TV show, but again, you're just kind of rehashing like everything in this movie. Yeah,
don't
like,
get
don't
any
do
ideas.
There doesn't need to be a show.
We don't need to do this again. Like, it was done this way. You need to fucking leave it alone.
Yeah.
Like, you're already pissing me off, Amazon, doing the fucking Lord of the Rings, whatever the hell you're doing there, that I'm not excited about. I'm curious. Don't get me wrong. I will check it out, but I am staring at it with eyebrow cocked and muscles tensed to cringe, because I feel like a Lord of the Rings series is just going to be... You just can't... I feel like you can't beat the Peter Jackson movies. Then again, people said you couldn't even make Lord of the Rings a movie, so I could be wrong. But
how they're going from like movies to like TV shows and expanding on whatever universe, it's kind of like, okay, like that's fine, but do we really need it? Probably not.
Well, it makes me start thinking, is this... And I think, you know, this is the bigger conversation here, right? Is this... Movies like Scott Pilgrim, these one-hit wonder, so to speak, movies, where there's no franchise, it's just this great movie that came out and it was done. Do you think that this is really going away? I mean, lots of people are holding on, myself included, holding on hope it's gone.
Definitely, because now we're getting, like, trilogies and shit like that. to where it's like, oh, we can't have one avatar, even though I was like totally fine with one avatar. Yeah, one like, avatar was fine. I do not one avatar need a didn't second and a yeah. third one, but apparently they're doing it anyways.
Even like five.
Yeah.
But it's on just that
like,
note,
and then like Star Wars, it's like, do we really need another trilogy? Like that trilogy? No. Right. Like, we did not really need that.
No, I didn't enjoy it at all.
I feel like we're just doing it because, you know, we're capitalizing on it now. Yeah, it's definitely for the money, and it's not, again, for I want to make this, like, work of art and, right. you know, entertain or whatever. Or
I think it's that I think there's a feeling of, like, I don't need to make anything. Not how that sounds weird, but like
I don't need to be.
I don't need to try to make something good. I just need to make something marketable.
Yeah,
and people will go see it, and I'll make money, and yeah. I don't care
like,
if it's
shit. I can use the same right. story, the same type of people, or whatever, right. and it'll still sell. It yeah. might not be like as good as like the original stuff, but I don't really care about that. And that's what I'm starting to see a lot, and it kind of irritates me because it's like I want that like originality
right.
to like the movies.
Right.
Instead of just seeing the same, like when Tenet came out, I'm just like, that's like the same thing as Inception, dude. Like,
yeah, I mean, no one here has seen Tenet, mm-hmm. so I don't know. I've heard it's like James Bond with time travel, which again, to your point, it's kind of like, okay, James Bond with a twist. Like, yeah. I don't know if Tenet's good or bad. I'm not going to see it until yeah. probably it comes out on VOD at this point.
Sorry, not to jump like all over the place, but basically it's refreshing, especially lately.
Right.
That we've been doing kind of like older movies.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like,
yeah,
wow,
yeah.
this is like it. And it's, you know, pretty good. And we don't need to do like another movie or another show about it. Like, that's just it.
And then something that that's one of the reasons I really, like, really, really value your opinion on like a movie like this, because I could say the same thing, but the argument will always be, well, Thomas, you watched it in 2010, so it's just nostalgia for you. You know, it's kind of like how people look at some 80s movies like Breakfast Club and stuff. Yeah, it's a good movie. I'm not going to say it's not. It's a great movie. But at the same time, like for a lot of the people who were teenagers in the 80s, that was like the movie. And it's like, okay, get over yourself. Like it's maybe not that good. But for you, you've never seen this movie before. You know, like you don't have the nostalgic take on it. You have the maybe nostalgia for the time, but you weren't like, oh my God, I loved Scott Pilgrim in high school. I watched it so many times. So both refreshing and sad to hear your point that's like, oh, this is so refreshing because movies suck. The follow-up to that, I'm kind of curious, is do you think that instead of getting the Scott Pilgrims, these one-off movies, or even like the Inceptions for that matter, because Inception was a one-off movie too around mm-hmm. the time, do you think that those types of stories are going to be moving to these bingeable, streamable options?
Yeah, they're going to have to. I mean, with everything that's going on, right?
Well, I mean, more in the sense of like, because I guess I didn't really start thinking about it until you brought it up, but like Scott Pilgrim is like a 2-hour long movie-ish. Mm-hmm. It's like 1 hour, 52 minutes.
Yeah.
Splitting hairs. You made a point that it probably would be a little bit more fleshed out if it was 2.5 hours or even as like a shorter season or of yeah. a series, like, right? Like a 7-episode series, miniseries or so. I totally agree with you. Like, I could see, obviously, with this whole cast and everything, if this movie was like, we're going to do like a 5-part miniseries, mm-hmm. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, totally works. Like, it works yeah. arguably a little bit better because you do get that little bit more fleshed out.
Yeah.
It's making me think about a lot of those shows that are coming out now. I think, like, the first one that comes to my mind is, like, Kingdom on Netflix, the Korean zombie movie. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking it's a movie. It's a show. But, like, it kind of works perfectly as a show. It could be a movie, and I think that story is a movie on Netflix somewhere,
mm-hmm.
but it works really nicely as a show. And I'm starting to kind of wonder if maybe one of the reasons we're not seeing movies like Scott Pilgrim anymore in the mainstream
yeah.
is because they're going
it's probably
to
because
Netflix.
You make more money.
Oh, yeah.
That. Yeah, especially if you get season after season mm-hmm. after season, you're making more money like than just doing
a
possibly
yeah.
just a one-off movie.
And hoping because, people buy yeah. it forever, yeah.
Yeah, because after a while, once it goes out of theaters, it's like, okay, like, you're just generating revenue right. from, like, you know.
You get a lull until it comes on, yeah. nowadays, like, VOD or Blu-ray or whatever.
Exactly,
so.
And, like, who's really purchasing that anymore? So, yeah. it's kind of, but at least with TV shows, people will keep watching the same shit over and over
right,
again.
Right, right. You binge it, and it's Netflix paying you the revenue for people watching mm-hmm. it, you know, so.
Yeah, so I think that's it's kind of heading in that direction. And it's still nice to, like, get movies, obviously, but I think,
yeah.
I think the popularity is definitely like with the shows right now because it gives people that like.
Well, you don't have to go.
Not only is it like longer, like usually these are like hour long episodes or whatever.
Right, right.
But you get like more details like in those episodes. You
I think it pulls you in. Yeah,
it pulls you in. You form connections with like the characters and like the just even like the setting and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think it and I think it's also like the digestibility, if I could be so bold as to make up a word, I think, of these types of shows is like I can sit on my ass on the TV and just watch the show.
Yeah.
Take it all in and be done as if it were an 8-hour long movie or however long it ends up being. With a movie, there is that element of like I gotta get up, I gotta get dressed, I gotta go to the theater, I gotta buy a ticket, I gotta sit in a possibly dirty theater. Oh, I'm hungry, now let me pay for some overpriced popcorn. And I'm thirsty now, and so I get an overpriced drink, and let me sit through this 2-hour movie. Okay, it was good, and now I'm not going to be able to watch it again unless I want to go repeat that, or it comes out in some other format that I can watch at home. And I think it's kind of like, it's what makes me sort of conflicted on like the Tenet debacle of like, I want it to come out in theaters, it has to come out in theaters, I refuse to let it come out on VOD.
I want it to play on like...
on like the IMAX screens and shit. And it's like whatever. The 80mm whatever stuff. Yeah, and it's like, that's great. It probably is so much, so beneficial to that film as an art form because that's just how Christopher Nolan is. Like, that's how he does his shit.
Yeah. But and I'm wondering though if the... I feel like filmmaking as an art is kind of losing its... I don't know how to describe it. I think it's just losing its way because as a director, I definitely feel them like they care about how the movie looks aesthetically and like having the 8mm, it's like a big thing. But when you have people that, you know, don't even care about 4K, let's say, or things like that,
they
just have your standard TV or whatever.
Yeah.
They're not thinking about that at all. They just want to like watch whatever TV show is on basically.
Right.
So are you,
cause this is kind of my, this is my trouble with this, with how you mentioned, like, I want to see more movies like this. And it's like, well, movies like this exist or to a degree in like that kind of indie realm, right? Like you do have indie movies that are like this, but they are a lot, when you start hearing about them, they're a lot more dramatic or the budget's lower and you kind of got to put up with that. And I think what you're pointing out is a really big criticism of the industry right now in this regard is that it's sort of this, if it's not... the beat you over the head with the 20 sequels mess, it's the high art thing where if you don't like it, you must be an idiot. Like, yeah. I always think of, like, our third episode on this show ever of Hereditary, where everyone's like, oh my god, Hereditary was amazing, and, like, all of us and Patrick just, like, really didn't care for it. Like, we watched it, and we were just like, this kind of sucks. Like, we don't... Like, it, to me, the movie felt like it needed to pick what it wanted to be, you know? Horror movie... with a little bit of family drama, or a family drama movie with like an underlying supernatural tone, which it didn't feel like it had for the first half. So it was just, or it felt like it had, but it didn't do anything for the first half. And it was just, I that's my genuine criticism to this day of that movie. And I feel like there are people who very adamantly disagree with me on that. And that's totally fine. In my opinion, if you like a movie, you like a movie. I am will gladly accept that I am in the minority here, but I feel like there are some people who refuse to feel that way.
So would you choose that type of film that has like family drama and horror over something like The Haunting of Hill House, which has maybe
That's a great example.
That's what, like, I was just thinking. I was just like, you know, because you could go on Netflix and watch that and that's much better.
Right.
Both visually and like plot wise, it's better because you're getting, it's the same movie basically, honestly.
I think it depends how you look at it, right? Like, if you, and this is the trouble, because, like, you're right. I personally think if you could stand to sit through the 10 hours it would take you to watch The Haunting of Hill House in theaters, it would be a much, in my opinion, better experience than watching it on TV. Because I like the theater. There's so much to take in from that aesthetic of, like, this is the shot that I am framing. And you're in a theater and you're kind of taking it in. As opposed to I'm at my TV and, oh, I looked at my phone for 5 minutes because I wasn't paying attention. Oh, I missed that beautiful show. Oh, whatever. Okay, who cares? And just like,
maybe, there's so maybe much not. There. I guess it like depends on the
right. But person, I think it's such a tough, to me, it's such a tough comparison because like Hereditary, I will admit though I don't care for the movie, aesthetically, I love the director's, like, just approach to shots. Like, he has this very, like, scary Wes Anderson thing going on where it's, like, there's a lot of symmetry. There's clear, like, this accentuated color in certain spots to kind of draw your eye. Like, the guy knows how to make a movie as far as filming it goes. Mm-hmm. Writing it, I think there's something to be said there. But that's my opinion. I love his style aesthetically. Haunting of Hill House, there were things I didn't like about it just as much as I didn't like about Hereditary, but it also was made for TV. I think it would benefit if, like, they were able to make it for a movie, but a theater, but, like, it does kind of, you know, it's stuck in the box in front of me. It's kind of made to not always be something to show you. It's got to just kind of have the dead time. But then you have episodes in it, and this is kind of the thing. It's like Haunting of Hill House, if it was a movie, it probably would not be as good as the show because, like we pointed out, you can't talk about it as much. But the interesting thing with having the episodes is there's, like, an entire episode that's, like, almost seemingly a single shot.
Yes.
It's just moving through. I love that. At least for a good half that episode, it's just a single shot.
But you can do so much more with it. And again, if there's the demand for it, like, if people are, like, watching it over and over again and they're wanting more, like, obviously Netflix or whomever is going to, like, provide that.
Right.
They're going to continue, like, giving that to their audience because that's how they make money.
And I think you run that franchise risk there, right? Like, you couldn't have season two of Scott Pilgrim versus the World. It's a one-off show.
That's true. And I guess we do see that with shows where it's like, oh, 10 seasons and they just keep going on and on.
Walking Dead, perfect example of that. Perfect example. I maybe was like that. 4 seasons before I said, okay, I'm done. Like, and it was like halfway through it or something. But they went to, like, they're ending it now or just ended it or something. And it's on season 9, season 10, season 15, whatever the hell it is. Like, that's so long. And it's not a sitcom. You're not just rehashing the same shit over and over. Like, you have to go somewhere, you have to do something. Mm-hmm. At some point, people are just getting sick of it.
I think the main point of all of this, basically, is that it's more about accessibility now than it is about the actual movie. Like we were talking about, like, with the effects, special effects and everything. What made movies, like, so great in the first place, which is the reason why we would go to movie theaters and go see the movie, because it was an experience.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm not getting the same thing over and over and over, because, like, Star Wars, like you brought up, is a great example of, like, by the time that last one came out, I was like, yeah, sure, let's go see it. But if there was, like, things stopping us from going to see that train wreck of a film, which
we have now, you know, we have things that are kind of, like, preventing us to go see a movie. And even, like, not just, like, with COVID and everything, but costs is, like,
a big deal.
We have dramatically seen, like, ticket prices going up.
Right.
And, like, just even buying, like, food and stuff. Think about a family of three. That's like an outing, like a special outing that you only go, like, maybe once a month.
Right. You better hope there's something good that's still out.
Exactly. Like, you only go for, like, a special movie if it's like a Marvel movie or something like that, that only comes out, like, you know,
every other month or so. Now, I guess now none of
but
them
But you don't out, have that anymore.
No, you have. And I think that's the difficulty of it, right? It's like, you hear a movie's good, and, like, if it's something like Scott Pilgrim, you might not have any fucking idea what Scott Pilgrim versus the World is. It's not like with Marvel or something, not to shit on Marvel some more like I always do, but, you know, if someone's like, oh, the new Spider-Man movie, it's like, I know who Spider-Man is. Like, I know what I'm getting when I go see this, right? Like, I know at the bare minimum it's going to be Spider-Man fighting a bad guy, and Mary Jane's probably going to be involved, and then some other shit's going to happen. With something, if someone's like, oh, you should go see Scott Pilgrim versus the World, I'm going to be like, what the fuck is that? And they're going to be like, it's really good, man. It's like, you know, here's the trailer, like, watch the trailer on YouTube or whatever. But they're going to be like, oh my God, it's, like, really good. You should go see it. And I'm like, okay. And I'll go see it. And, like, I have fucking no idea what I'm going to see. And that's not to say that, you know, everybody knows everything that's popular. So there's going to be people who probably don't know Spider-Man. And we're going to go in there and be like, Spider-Man, what the hell? And I'm like, oh, wow, this was enjoyable. And doesn't make things like Spider-Man any necessarily less enjoyable. But I think there's that thing we've lost of, like, going to see a movie that is, like, an original movie that you just don't, like, you don't know what to expect. And then you go see it, and then it's good or bad. And if it's bad, it's like, oof.
Instead of seeing a movie that's, like, super redundant.
Yeah, like derivative or something like that. Or worse, you get the whole thing in the fucking trailer and it's like you might as well have already seen the movie.
Yeah, like you know it's like poor quality and they just pushed it out to make whatever bit of money they could.
And I mean, they got to make money, that's fine. I'm not opposed to people making money in that regard, but it's like I wish that the quality was there.
Do you want
to
pay $50?
Right, like at some point your going after money is going to make me not give it to you because it's just like, oh look, Spider-Man 12, Spider-Man takes a nap. Mm.
Yeah, and I think we have gotten more poor quality movies recently.
Transformers.
Yeah.
Like
because this was around that time when like Transformers it was like the first like two, I think, was starting up out. Here.
Yeah, like really this is like Scott Pilgrim versus the World might very well be one of the last like solid franchise-less movies to come out without the sprinkling of them throughout the rest of the next decade. Because like the rest of it was almost entirely covered by Jesus, I don't know, like maybe what, Harry Potter is probably in here somewhere.
That's right.
The Marvel movies are just starting up here. Eventually Star Wars coming back. And I think if there's one thing I would say is the heart of all of this criticism is like no one wants to take a risk on movies anymore. But like we're taking a risk on TV. Like for all the criticisms I have of Star Wars.
Because you can stop.
You can pull it and be like, I'm done. But it's like for all the criticism I have of Star Wars, The Mandalorian is a great television show. Like, it's such a good and, like, cinematic quality television show. Some of the Netflix series that we just listed are, like, really fucking good and came out after Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. And, like, we're taking a risk on those because, like Amber said, we can just pull it. We can go, okay, we're not going to renew you for another season. And it sucks in some cases, but, like, it's kind of the viewership that matters, right? With movies, it's like, I'm giving you butt tons of millions of dollars for a one-off shot at making me that money back plus some. When you put it
and
in
like,
that perspective, it's tough.
Think of how angry you get when you like go to a movie and it sucks. Like it sucks butt, and you just paid. You already paid the money, so you're kind of just like. So, and you sometimes end up leaving because it's like I had those times where it's just like I slept through that movie. Because
No, I've slept through several movies in my time, whether I was a little kid or older. But I think the problem is that you have these movies where it's either become a cult classic and hope we make that money back in the future, or like you better be a blockbuster hit right now. And there's no in between of like, it was fine, because nowadays it's like, if it was, it was fine, it's a failure. If it doesn't make $1 billion in its opening weekend, it's a failure. And I think of movies like Blade Runner and shit, even Blade Runner 2049. It's like, these movies didn't actually do that good in their opening weekends and stuff. And like people were kind of like, man, it's okay. And it's like Blade Runner is fucking amazing. Like Blade Runner, both of them are fucking amazing. And it's like, you're this movie probably, you know, only did so. I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's kind of built this cult following afterwards. And it's like, that's kind of almost your best bet with these one-off movies. It's like, boy, I really hope it gets a cult following behind this movie that really fucking loves it so I can make money off them in the future. Like, because if I don't, and this movie doesn't do good now, that's it. You know, we're not doing it again. And it does make this kind of a hazardous realm to work in. But it is kind of sad that, like, the franchise end has come on so strong that it's like, and we don't even need to take the risk anymore. When they probably have enough money to take that risk.
Yeah.
So, that tangent definitely went on a lot farther than I thought it would. As far as my rating of this movie goes, I think it's definitely, like, on the rewatch of it, 2020, 27-year-old Thomas is probably going to have a bit of a differing opinion than, 17-year-old Thomas. This movie's probably a solid, like, 9 out of 10, maybe even, like, 8.7 out of 10, just because there are some things that did not age well in this movie, and I try to do the whole product of its time thing in my head, but I'm like, it was 2010... You can't cherry pick what you're going to be quote unquote woke about. So, you know, I'm going to take some points off, but I still think it's a great movie. I mean, like, it's one I could rewatch right now and I'd be like, yeah, sure. Like it's got that quality of like, if it was just on in the background, I'm fine with it. If I'm actively watching it, I'm fine with it. I think that's a sign of like a really solid movie, is you can digest it in whatever way works best. Whereas others, it's like, I have to pay attention because I'm going to miss the twist, or I've had to watch it so many times I know what's happening in order to passively have it on. But yeah, so I think like 8.7 I'll go with for this movie. It's still great, probably still knocking on my top 10, if not top 5, but I'd have to really think about that one. So that'll about wrap up Scott Pilgrim versus the World from 2010. Amber, what are we watching, or what are we talking about, I guess I should say, rather, for small screens next week?
For small screens next week, we're going to be doing Dragon's Dogma.
Yes, the new Netflix...
My most favorite game in the entire world.
Yep, and spoilers, it is the new Netflix television snore show. That's what I meant to say. Show. God, whatever was I thinking? But yes, next week we'll be talking all about Dragon's Dogma, the television show, and probably going to be talking about the video game with our resident Dragon's Dogma expert, Amber, here. After that, we are going to, on the main feed, go ahead and dive into our 2-week countdown to Halloween. That's right, we are maybe starting a little bit later than others, but we are jumping on the Halloween bandwagon and doing a little bit of horror before we lose our chance to. And we are going to be diving right into a movie neither of us have seen, and that is Lighthouse with Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson. I've heard nothing but good things about this movie constantly. Amber has too. And neither of us have seen it. Not for lack of trying. We just kind of haven't got a chance. And then it got close enough to Halloween. And we're like, let's do an episode on it. Let's do it for Halloween. Fuck it. Yeah. So.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I used to be something of a lighthouse keeper myself. But anyway, until we talk about Dragon's Dogma in the following week, we are talking about Lighthouse. As always, I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And this was So What Happens Next. Stay spooky, my friends.
Scott Pilgrim versus
the World.